Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here, as always, on a late Monday with producer Mike. Hello, producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. How you doing? It's getting dark out early, huh?
Okay, Yogi Berra. You're using baseball. So, okay, can we start over?
Because yeah, start the episode's over. Done.
Yeah. Algorithm just shut us down.
We did have some baseball comments, though, this week.
No, I think the baseball fans enjoy the fact that their love destroys our show.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at that. I called it our show. What a nice thing to say.
It is our show, yeah.
Well, you know, it's like just like Facebook is Mark, Mr. and Mrs. Zuckerberg's company. Don't you always love that? We received a $250 million donation from Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Zuckerberg, whatever her name is. It's like, okay, she's a pediatrician. Okay.
Is that what she is?
I think so.
Why?
Well, you know, she's...
They why work?
She didn't know the android incel she was dating was going to turn into Mark Zuckerberg. She was like, I better keep looking at these kid genitals for a while. You know, I don't know how this guy might shoot up a school soon.
Right.
And instead he became a mega billionaire. So congratulations to the Zuckerbergs. Big week this week on the show. I'm very excited about this show. Before we get to anything housekeeping, obviously, no, you know what? Let's do that later because I don't want to screw up the algorithm. YouTube probably likes the fact that I slandered the Zuckerbergs. They're like, oh, this is anti other social media content.
Right.
Let's boost this one. Fuck you, Bezos. I saw Conclave this weekend.
Conclave.
Rafe Fiennes, also known as Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, the Vatican
Stanley
movie.
Tucci, the Stanley Tucci we mentioned, I think, like last week on the show.
One of my favorites.
I really liked this movie, and I don't want to spoil it. I'm just going to say I recommend it. I might do kind of a Patreon spoiler episode. Mm-hmm. But and Mike is now in full geisha mode for some reason.
I just need something in my hands.
Did Priscilla Zuckerberg Chen make you think of? That's racist.
No, but it's on my desk.
Racist.
Get out of here. I respect the Japanese people. Well, you don't, obviously. I respect Tony Hinchcliffe over here.
The first love of my life was half Japanese, half German. One of the great jokes of my early comedy career. It was hacky, but I said, sorry, when we have sex, I really feel like the Allied powers. But it's true, half German, half Japanese. Lovely lady. She's a pediatrician in Minnesota.
Oh.
When I was stalking her online, she made it all the way through her brain surgery, her neurosurgery residency, and then, you know, chickened out at the last minute and said, I want to be a family doctor. Mm. And that's why we could never work.
Right.
She was a coward and I was unfaithful.
Right.
Plain and simple. So it was college. I mean, it was a college thing and law school a little bit, to be honest.
Of course.
Here's the thing about cheating, Mike. And now I'm practically a man of the cloth.
Talk to me.
The thing about cheating is the Catholic perspective on cheating is I cheated on spring break senior year.
Yeah.
It's chronicled in my special half blackface, which, by the way, as a nice gift to me, everybody, we're a little stagnant on the reviews. If you haven't watched Half Blackface on Amazon Prime, watch it. And if you have watched it, go leave a 5-star review. Come on. It's free to do. You just got to do it on your computer. But cheated on spring break and then went off to law school. And we stayed together all through law school. But the thing is, when you go all the way and you feel like you've committed capital murder to your relationship and you survive, making out with women at bars just doesn't feel as guilty. You start... of course it's terrible, it's wrong, but you start rationalizing like, well, I'm kind of a hero because I'm not fucking this woman.
Sure.
Like I'm kind of a good guy in this story because I could. And I'm saying no.
Right.
We're just doing heavy petting.
Yes.
So I'm really preserving the sanctity of our relationship.
Yes.
So anyway, Conclave is, I don't know how we got there. I told you it was going to be a
Conclave
episode.
Huh?
I had two donuts right before coming in here. So I'm just getting warmed up.
God help me.
But Conclave, I don't want to spoil it, but I'm going to say there is the twist ending of this movie is so good and so unexpected that it felt like.
Are they actually Jewish? Is that the twist?
That's the twist. It's because there was like laughter in the theater. I was one of the people, but not because this is so dumb, but because it was so, wait, what?
Yeah.
But not in a way where you go, that's so dumb. Mm-hmm. But it was so surprising that you like something can sometimes scare you so much you laugh a little bit. And it's just, I'm waiting. The thing is, we don't see adult movies in this country anymore. Like movies for adult. We watch plenty of porn. I mean, actual real movies for adults.
Yeah, yeah.
But if more people saw this movie, absolute culture war ready to happen from this movie. I found it to be profound. I thought it was really well done. And I thought the ending, philosophically and faith-wise, challenges you in a good way, not in a, they went woke. That's how idiots will see it. But I found it to be much more of a profound, whoa, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think Ralph Fiennes in the movie is sort of our collective conscience. He's the conscience of the movie. And so I recommend Conclave, but I'll talk about it more on my Patreon. By the way, Patreon, thanks for bringing it up, Mike.
You bet.
It's only $3 a month, folks. So when you're watching Half Blackface for free, that's where you can treat it like a tip jar. But I, election night, that almost sounded like my Chappelle. I, on election night, 7 p.m. Eastern until the break of dawn, maybe, because I don't even know if we'll know who the president is. I will be dressed up as Trump, live commentating election night for as many hours as it takes. I am willing to go up until midnight West Coast time, if that's what it takes.
Okay.
Midnight West Coast time. Whoa.
But that should be fun for everybody who appears to love my Trump and love my King tent.
Yeah.
You know, this is so join the Patreon. There's other stuff. There's book reviews. There's bonus podcasts. There's videos and stuff that I do. But that's, you know, obviously feel free to not continue joining. But like join for this. It'll be real fun. So Half Blackface and join the Patreon. As far as shows coming up, as of this episode, Princeton, New Jersey, Catch a Rising Star, November 7th and 8th. Come on out, New Jersey. It'll be fun. I always have a fun time at those shows. Okay. So Conclave, gigs, blah, blah, blah. Let's get to the meat of the episode. Here's big appetizer for this main. The main course is we all know.
Yeah. This is like appetizer. This is like the antipasto at Easter at my parents' house. It's like basically the meal.
Donald Trump had a Klan rally at Madison Square Garden last night.
Sure. Hard to call it otherwise.
I had to go see my ma up in the Bronx yesterday, and I thought getting the 1 o'clock train into Penn Station would give me enough of a buffer before the hate came marching in.
Mm-hmm.
When the hate comes, and it didn't.
Oh, when the hate comes marching in.
It wasn't enough time. I got out there, and it was, in the words of The Rock, this has to be the biggest collection of absolute trash The Rock has ever seen. It was that horrible. And it was so funny because I was like, wow, look at all these different types of white people that are full of hate. Mm-hmm. Like there was a diversity of white. You know what I mean? You're like, these guys look like folksy Midwesterners,
right,
who don't want immigrants in their town.
Right.
While these guys look like hardcore bikers that can't wait to get into a brawl with a black biker gang.
Right. Plus the Italians.
Plus, you know, just.
They're going to a Ranger game, those.
Yeah. We got 3 tickets this week. We're seeing Maniscalco, the Rangers, and Trump. It's like I died and went to Ginzo heaven. So I get out, and it's outside on the street. Things were not filling up the Penn Station area yet. There's this fly that just keeps, this is really our episode of Breaking Bad. Anyway, I get upstairs. So I'm on the street of 34th Street, and it was just huge merch tables. People in their 45, 47 hats just milling around. And I did see, when I was going into the city, there was one guy on my platform in Bloomfield, New Jersey. One guy wearing a little younger than me, like, you know, look about 6'3", you know, normal looking guy, big MAGA hat on. And I thought, this is like the racist ugly duckling, because he's probably a little uncomfortable on this platform, if we're being real. He didn't have the defiant look of like, step to me.
Yeah.
I want you to step to me.
Right.
It was more like, hey, can't wait. And then I guarantee you, he was like a puppy you know, that found its family when he got to the MAGA rally. It's like, mm-hmm. they, instead of whimpering, they were just saying the N-word and curling together. Like, so, you know, kind of a silver lining there. You know, he found his community. And that's what I said today to some people at work. I said, here's the thing. Finding community is good. Finding friendship and fellowship is good. But there, and because it's a place to find support. But there's a difference between support and enabling. What Trump and MAGA do is not support. It's enabling your hate. It's not support because you feel left out. You're left out because you're hateful and you suck. Those are usually good reasons to be left out, and you need to change to be welcomed in. Now, if you're not welcomed in because you're different, say you're trans or you're gay or you're black or you're an immigrant, well, that's not right. Sorry if I've just triggered MAGA by naming all the things you hate, a woman. But enabling is different than support. And what he's doing is not offering support, but enabling feels like support to those being enabled. So I leave. I say, thank God I'm not going to be here. When I was coming back, the hate rally was going on. But I got home, and boy, oh boy, a lot of controversy. Comedian Tony Hinchcliffe seemed to get the most of the... We don't have to go into Trump. I think I talk about Trump enough. And next week is going to be...
Well, it's funny because I don't even think Trump was the... Like, the headliner was the Trump event.
Yeah.
But I haven't even seen anybody talking about things that he said. Or right. Hinchcliffe is like the star of this fucking fiasco.
And I'm sure Joe Rogan's going to have him on to wash his reputation.
Yeah.
Just Axe body spray him metaphorically so he's cleaned of all this liberal outrage.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. Two things about that event. First of all, I saw a guy on TikTok who posted he was with his son. Because you gotta teach the hate.
Yeah.
He was with his son and he was doing like one of those camera pans and first of all, there were plenty of empty seats behind him. And he was like, sold out Madison Square Garden for Trump, 94,000 seats.
At the Garden?
Yeah. You laugh, but this is the delusion.
Get out of here.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I saw the TikTok either last night or this morning.
And it was legit?
And the comments were like, you are so fucking dumb. And like, people roasting him. And I would say he was making a joke, except he was at the rally. Like, right. He was there. He was in his seat.
Right.
94,000.
That is, I mean, I can't even fathom being that stupid.
But you know what? But here's the thing. If Trump had told them, wait, nobody ever thought we could do this. 94,000. Nobody's ever had this many people at MSG. They'd all be going, unbelievable.
Right. Right.
And I turned on Newsmax last night to see their horrible commentary. It's just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
That's for those of you that don't know Newsmax, that's the fentanyl to Fox News' heroin.
Yeah.
And the two people talking were like, Democrats are panicking because this is blue New York and Donald Trump has sold out the Garden. Okay, dummies. There's like 8 million people in New York. 20,000 people is like 1/50th of what the margin of victory will be. But to them, they're all in their own asses so much that they're like, oh my God, the Garden? Like, right. He's got to win. State.
How many people? I mean, I guarantee you, a third of that crowd was from New Jersey. Another third was probably from Connecticut. Like, I mean,
oh, it's Staten Island, it's Long Island, it's Jersey. And then there are those people who it's like Trump is like fish for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
they
Trump
travel.
Heads?
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Phil Lesh.
N-words.
Yeah.
So that's the general tenor that I walked into. But then, like I said, I didn't really pay attention, but Hinchcliffe was trending.
Yeah.
So he said something about like there's a huge pile of garbage in the middle of the ocean. I don't know if that was like a setup to mock climate change or something. And then he said it's called Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all the Latinos for Trump laughed and, you know, flogged themselves because they love self-punishing. But what I had a problem with this, and I thought Tony Hinchcliffe really acquitted himself well. He was him and Nikki Glaser. you know, in another life, you know, Nikki Glaser and I, but anyway, they were the two stars of the Tom Brady roast.
Right.
And Hinchcliffe, who I had always just assumed was like some Rogan affiliated edgelord and nothing more. I was blown away. I thought his work material there was so good. Now, yes, it's prepped and it's roast. It's not the big, but he was great. He was the standout. He had like 4 minutes and he destroyed. Maybe that just got him too much bipartisan support and he wanted to make clear where his cultural allegiances are.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's not the telling jokes like that. I am one of those people, when Amy Schumer made the joke many years ago that she disavowed because she became a millionaire brand, and I get it to a certain extent. Mike, you know I would never do that. Become a millionaire brand.
It's an impossibility.
But if I did, I would not disavow because I will have not gotten to where I am being ashamed of what I'm saying or being questioning what I do. But anyway, yeah. She had said this joke, which was, I used to date Latin men, but now I prefer consent. I thought it was a tremendous joke. Mm-hmm. Because it's playing off of the common stereotype of an aggressive machismo male culture.
Yeah.
That's, and of course it was like fucking horrible racist, disgusting. And she, like she said, I'm sure I wouldn't make that joke. Well, I liked it. And, but if you do that joke in a comedy club, it's one thing.
Right.
Okay.
Like yeah.
And if, but if you do racial or racist jokes in front of a crowd full of racists, supporting an overtly racist political candidate 1 week before an election at his, you know, racist bukkake festival, it hits differently.
Yep.
You that isn't the, hey, when I'm in a club, you got to let me be me, or it's a comedy show. And I get it. He's there as a comedian. He's not there as a political commentator. He's obviously there for comedy. But there is something different. I think this is what people, reasonable people, obviously there's going to be shrill people on one side who wouldn't like it in any case at all. And there will be people who will defend it no matter what because it's a Trump event and they just have to suck. Jesus Christ, this fucking fly. Sorry, people. What the fuck?
I'm sorry, man. I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
We have fruit flies in here. There's no food in here. I don't know what happened.
Oh, my God. It's me watching all these Ryan Murphy series. They think I'm an ally, a little more than an ally. These fruit flies. The point is, and you can weigh in on this. I just thought it's one of those things where just like context matters both ways.
Yeah.
If you're in a comedy club, I have no patience for people who police comedy.
Right.
98% of the time, and it's not my political beliefs. Most of the time, I'm just like, I didn't like it, but he's free. It's comedy, you know? And I don't say that flippantly, but I am broad, wide latitude for comedy and comedy spaces.
Yeah.
And this was not a comedy space. This is, you're doing comedy, but like, there is a little bit of responsibility here.
There's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
In my opinion, there's a lot.
But by doing the event in and of itself, that's the other thing.
Right.
By choosing to do a Trump event 1 week before the election, it's the cat's out of the bag. Like you are a little bit more than just nice guy who roasts. Jeff Ross is probably a nice guy who roasts.
Right.
But Hinchcliffe has been living and breathing and making money in this kind of white power space, this white male empowerment space.
Just being a fucking jerk off.
Right. For so long.
Yeah.
That it's like, okay, you're this is a little bit you. This is a little bit you. It's not just, I'm just a edgy comedian.
Right. Is that on me to talk now?
Go for it.
Okay, thank you.
Go for it.
No, I agree.
Go for it, Mrs. Zuckerberg.
I agree. I agree with you pretty much on everything. I also, the other thing that I try to not get so bent out of shape about, and I know that you might feel a little differently because of things you've said on this podcast in general, you know, like obviously you've been going really hard at people that are into Trump, just generally. And I do think that there are some people that, I mean, I don't want to hate half the country. So I try to give some people the benefit of the doubt.
I hate 90% of the country. Like, why should MAGA get a pass?
But I think I think we're moving into this stage now where for a long time there was this really weird like, how do I even want to say this? With comedy specifically, because there were so many people that were saying, like, well, we don't want comedy policed.
Yeah.
Which I agree with fundamentally.
People should go back and probably listen to the right wing comedy episode because we probably hovered around this.
Right.
Yeah.
I also don't want comedy policed.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see, I want to be able to watch a Blazing Saddles or like movies that kind of have.
Right. But being the Derek Chauvin of comedy. Yes.
No, this is what I'm saying. Right? So like, this is, but this is. This is the
that
point,
needs
JL.
To be policed.
There were so like I was kind of like I was kind of becoming a comedian during the Trump, like the beginning initial Trump run 2015. You know, I was starting to work a little bit as a comic. You know, and there was this whole thing around it where it's like, well, I don't know, like I don't know how bad Trump is going to be, and also maybe like just because he's kind of funny and his sympathies seem to be like. There was a shadow of a doubt where you could sort of be like, you'd be like, well, I'm not really racist. I'm just a comedian. I'm just like trying to make off color jokes. And there, but I think now we're too far along where it feels like in this final push to make it even just about Hinchcliffe and those guys, like that Austin pack of like white comedians, like Rogan and all these dudes, it just seems like Trump's final push has been to like weaponize them.
Yeah.
He's doing like Rogan's podcast, Schultz's podcast. And I don't know if Schultz is a Trump guy, but like when you start giving this dude the platform and you start going to his rallies and you start doing jokes, you know, it's not like Hinchcliffe was warming up a comedy show.
Right.
Like, were there any other comedians on the bill? Like, or was he just. It's.
Are you saying Don Jr. isn't funny?
But I just it's this.
Yeah.
This context based scenario where there's no other way of looking at it other than just being like, dude, like your crowd are these fervent, like white supremacists who, you know. I just don't understand taking the gig unless you are like a fucking Trump guy.
Right.
And I just think there's something gross about it.
Right. And to people who might say, so what if he's a Trump guy? Why does politics have to get into it? We have to stop accepting, and it's almost always right wing people now who say this, even if they're not Trump supporters, because they want to be welcomed back into sort of the fold when this all fizzles. Yes, there is something wrong with being a Trump supporter. Like, there is something wrong with being a Trump supporter. It's not just politics. He is something beyond politics. He is something beyond crude and cruel and awful. And, you know, when you see all these comedians doing like this kind of aggrieved. I remember hearing two very successful comedians on their podcast, and I enjoy their work, both of them. But when I heard, this is like many years ago, like early Trump. These are guys with wild success, but like, when the ninth thing doesn't happen to you, it's because there's this big diversity push in comedy. Right.
Well, Hinchcliffe's one of those guys too.
Right. Well, you know what? And we've all established that the pathway to comedy success now is deep throating Joe Rogan.
Right.
Like that is better than Carson.
Yeah. Right.
And
that's it.
So, but you have to be on the right side, just like they like to pretend there's no, if you are canceled or if you are a conservative, you are like a catcher in baseball. There is a faster path. If you're willing to sell out a little bit or exaggerate your leanings, there is a glide path to greater success financially. Right. But like I've said about Gutfeld on that conservative comedy episode, it's like you got to check your comedy. And that to me, right or left, that's when you've lost the game. It doesn't matter what your political leanings are. When you check your comedy skills, You've already sold out a little bit artistically. You've sold out the art. But Hinchcliffe got a lot of shit for it. And like I said, it's appearing at a Trump rally that's like a week before the election. It's,
you can't claim ignorance.
Right.
It can't. You're by doing that, you are deciding I'm like outing myself as a pure Trump supporter and I align myself with his beliefs. And that takes the context of his Puerto Rico joke and all this shit that he was saying to another level.
If Don Rickles were the guest of honor at a Klan meeting doing his roast jokes about different races,
right?
I don't think we'd view him as this killer, awesome roast like comedian.
So it's funny you bring up Rickles because he did do a benefit for Reagan. I think when Reagan was, because they were all friends with Reagan.
Yeah.
They loved Reagan. Now, obviously, it's a very different time.
Reagan? Rogan?
Whoa, you just blew my mind, dude.
Whoa, dude. That would be a Rogan clip.
Yeah. But, and I did think about this when I was, because I was thinking about, like, well, if I had to compare it to, I mean, the idea that I would compare Hinchcliffe to Rickles is fucking just insane. But the context is similar. And I really want to go back and watch that Rickles clip to see what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't imagine, even at that time, which would have been probably the very early 80s, that he's like, you know, oh, Puerto Rico is just a dump in the middle of the ocean. And or maybe he is. I don't know. But I just can't imagine that it's as crass as that.
Right.
And I don't know, man. It's just. Our guy Bill Maher, who obviously we both used to like, but okay. Now we don't think he's very good.
Okay, Mike.
He had Megyn Kelly on. Did you see this?
Awful. Awful. She fucking sucks.
Well, she's gotten worse. There was a time where she was kind of like.
She's gotten worse because she like was forced into having a conscience.
Yeah.
When I saw that movie Bombshell about like the Roger Ailes thing, I left that movie and said, I know I'm not supposed to feel this way. Fuck them. Like, I was like, I'm not saying I'm siding with Roger Ailes, but I'm like, these are propaganda pieces of shit.
Yeah.
These are people who spend their day shitting on Democrats, shitting on women, like doing all the things to make life for non-blonde millionaire women harder.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, oh, the creepy guy who you showed legs to and kind of slutted it up for is trying to get in your pants. And of course, I'm not saying that's okay, but I was just like, you're all garbage.
Mm.
Like, sure, he can be the biggest piece of shit and get fired and get sued and all that. Great. You're all garbage.
But I would say that at the first Trump election, I actually felt at the time that Megyn Kelly was like kind of being kind of fair.
But she showed her true stripes because she left and she said she did the news version of the Rogan comedy Gruttfeld comedy path.
Right.
Which is, oh, my NBC deal failed.
Right.
Immigrants. I'm so tired of immigrants and the trans. I'm almost a one-issue voter with trans, and I'm even more jawline and even more sleek and angry. I'm like Megyn Kelly 2.0. Hate more.
Yeah. Yeah. She's gotten, it's really become
she's alarming. Like, I'm never unsecuring the bag again.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Because the NBC thing was a disaster.
Right.
But, the one thing that I can say about Maher, who I have like come to really just kind of be over he challenged her on the fact that because they were comparing this to like the Hitler stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said something where he was like, you know, we already know that he's in power we've seen him in power and he wasn't Hitler. And Bill Maher said something where he was just like, well, Hitler in 1938 wasn't Hitler yet. Like Hitler in 33
wasn't it was. Right. Sorry. Right.
And he was like, Hitler became
pretty,
Hitler.
Pretty much Hitler at that point.
Right. Right.
He's
yes,
coming
good
to
point.
His prime.
Yes. Because <You know? laughs> I'm thinking of the World War II timeline 41.
Sure.
Like,
sure. But
I was sitting there and I was just like, all right, Bill Maher, like,
09
finally
MVP
says
LeBron
something. Yeah.
Is Hitler in 1938.
Right. But it's finally, it's like back on track. And it's like the one thing that I have always agreed with. He hasn't ever strayed away from thinking that Trump was bad.
Evil.
Bad
like basically
guy.
Evil.
Yeah.
And to that point, one of the things I want to say before, and we're going to take a break very quickly, but one of the things that also Ezra Klein brought up on his podcast or writing was one of the things they like to say is, well, we've already seen Trump in power. No, you've seen Trump in power with a bunch of people who believe in the Constitution and would like stop him. And one of the things, this guy, Miles, I forget his name, Miles, not Miles Garrett, but I forget the guy who was like a staffer who wrote an op-ed, an anonymous op-ed, and then owned up to it later that it was him. He was like, we hide things from him sometimes. We'll keep news from him. And he said that, like, aren't we heroic? And I get why he would think that. But to me, what the problem with that is, the American people broke it. Now they have to buy it.
Yeah.
Now you're protecting the American people. First of all, to be fair, put on my lawyer hat for a second, like basically unconstitutionally.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like him. He was elected by our rules in 2016.
Right.
You don't get to fuck his presidency because he's actually a piece of fucking shit that I'm working for. Then you shouldn't have backed him.
Right.
You shouldn't have supported him. You shouldn't have helped him get elected.
Yes.
But by doing that, you create this impression that he's safer than he is. You know what you should have? You should have let him bomb a tornado or a hurricane. Send a nuke at a hurricane. Let's see if he's still running for president now. You should have let him shoot Mexicans in the leg, protesters in the leg, and separate more families. Let him do what he wants to do. He's the president.
Right.
Let the people see how bad he is. Now, all these people, the woke generals like John Kelly.
Yeah.
Because we love the military, except all the people in the military.
Yes.
Patriotic. You've got to... This guy... These people aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
It's going to be Stephen Miller and J.D. Vance and Don Jr.
There's no Pence. There's no, because like all the people, I know, all the people that were like, oh, these guys are gross, these evangelicals, whatever. They were keeping him in check in some way.
They had,
and it's like they're gone.
A red line. Yeah. They all had a red line.
Right.
And the red line was a little thing called the Constitution.
Right. Mike. You're right, dude.
And now they're going to be like, what do you want to do, Trump? Well, I'm 80 and I'm in dementia and I shit myself and I'm very mad. I have mad poopy pants today. So we're going to bomb Mexico with all the nukes. And tell Vlad Putin, can you do me a favor? Tell Vlad Putin, you are free to rape everybody in Ukraine, men and women and kids if you want. That's okay too. And then we'll be like, oh, you know what? He was bad. Except Fox will go, Ukraine isn't a hero either.
Yeah, right.
As they're showing footage of like kids being gang raped. They're Ukraine could have handled this peacefully.
Right.
And they didn't. We're not saying this is okay. Like, that's as far as they'll go. We're not condoning this, but what do you expect?
Yeah, right.
And
meanwhile,
Gaza is a parking lot.
Right.
And there's just dead Mexicans. Like, there's a human body wall of dead Mexicans. It's like, I built the wall and Mexicans' dead bodies paid for it. And they're going to go, that's right. That's my president. Blah. And our stock market will tank. And they'll be like, the Democrats are sabotaging our markets.
Yep.
And, you know, that's it. So it's a good time. So the point is, those Republicans who did the right thing did the wrong thing.
They did the wrong thing, yeah.
And also the Republicans in the Senate who didn't convict.
But it's
the
funny.
The guy who ran the fucking treason attempt, they're wrong.
It's funny because you're so right. I hadn't really... I mean, I guess I've been thinking about it leading up to it because it's crazy how fast the election is coming up. By the time you guys hear this episode, it'll basically be time to vote. And
I already voted.
I'm sending in my absentee ballot because I'm still not registered in New York. But
where are you registered?
Jersey.
Damn it. I was hoping you'd be like, I lived in Pennsylvania for 2 weeks.
No,
so I'm registered there.
Yeah. Or Florida or something. I don't know. But I do think that it's like when you really do look back and look at it historically, like all of the Republicans that we thought were bad guys, you're right. That like Trump basically waited them out.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Pences, the generals, all those guys, he waited them out.
The woke generals.
The woke generals. And now they're gone. There really is no, it is just Trump sycophants that are going to follow him in if he wins.
I have General Mills backing me up. I have a box of Captain Crunch cereal running the show.
Yeah, man. And it's just, I don't know. It is a very scary thing. And from a content standpoint, the idea of like, dude, there are two different types of comedy now. It's not like there's like, you know how much I miss the days of like Charles Grodin or somebody where it's just like
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Yeah, I think we lost him last year, maybe.
But
either way, but
like the daily comedy is not innocent.
I know, but I'm not even saying that.
Right wing is a cultural movement. Like there's left wing comedy is not a movement shaping society.
Yeah.
Right-wing comedy has become this cudgel of like, they represent free speech. Like if a comic just screams out the N-word on a street corner, yeah, it's like, well, what? You want to cancel us?
I know.
Like cancel us?
Well, and it's just like, dude, I've been getting all these like horrific Instagram ads now. They've really been ramping up the ads on Instagram stories. And like Daily Wire Plus is just servicing the right wing. Yeah. And they're basically going into comedy. Like Daily Wire is like...
Well, Corolla, and I'm not going to lie. I want to watch... I know some people may be like, really? I want to watch Adam Carolla's animated series because he's been talking about that for like 15 years. Like yeah, he talked about when I was on the show, he had this idea and I think Carolla's funny.
Yeah.
But like, once again, a lot like Daily Wire content. And I guarantee you he's a big enough name. They wouldn't tell him what to do, but he probably knows it's like, let's lean into this a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'll never see his show because I'm never giving a fucking dime to Daily Wire Plus.
Yeah, of course not.
Although I probably could have been a voice on that show if I was still doing, and he's got some funny people like Kyle Tyler Dunnigan. Tyler Fisher, Kyle Dunnigan.
Dunnigan's very funny.
Dunnigan's really funny.
Dunnigan's really, really
he's
funny.
A very talented guy, very funny. And I don't, whatever his political leanings, I don't think I'd see him at a Trump rally. I could be wrong.
I don't think he's dumb enough to do that.
Right.
I think
even
that
if those are his leanings.
Yeah. I really don't. I do think Hinchcliffe is like a specific level of just like dumbass. You know, that like he, of course, would be the one at the center of all this fucking stupid shit. You
and
know?
It's he will pay no, he will only grow from this
yeah,
in terms of where his ecosystem.
Because he's digging in. He's like digging in his footing on that audience.
Right.
He never had the people like me to begin with.
Right.
You know,
and he gained my respect. That's the funny thing. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
But like I always made assumptions about him and then a 4-minute performance at the roast of Tom Brady. And I was like, he's legit.
Yeah.
Like I was one. And now I'm like, but yeah, you know, gross. So, we're as of this listening, we're five, I guess when this goes up Thursday,
mm-hmm,
5 days from election yes, day. So there, we just wanted to talk a little bit about that. Now, after the break, we're going to talk and don't worry, I will make this a broader cultural criticism.
I hope
we're going to talk the Menendez brothers after the break. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Excellent. Did you hurt your knee? Is that what I heard?
Everything's hurting.
Yeah.
I definitely need knee surgery on my right knee. I just know it from previous experience.
Surgery,
it's
huh?
really bad.
Wow.
And what I really need now is to get a day job with great benefits.
Good luck.
No. I think I will. I have some avenues to do so. And all I need is like, hey, if they fire me after 6 months... Yeah, but my knees are repaired. I got good shoulders and good knees. But speaking of needing a lot of money, let's talk about two kids who murdered their rich parents, the Menendez brothers.
Mm.
Hermanos Menendez. That's Spanish for brothers Menendez.
Got it.
I learned that on Arrested Development when Jason Bateman's character did not know what Hermanos meant. And he kept going, she's looking for this guy, Hermanos. the great, in my opinion, the best sitcom of all time, Arrested Development, not yeah, Netflix season.
In the mix.
Not Netflix season.
Yeah, the Netflix season.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how that was possible. It was like, what happened?
Sarah had become, Michael Sarah was so bad. And I don't even think I watched the other season they did.
I didn't. I protested.
Yeah. But the first season, I remember I was so excited. And then I remember watching it and I was just like, what is Michael Sarah doing in this?
Ugh.
He's not playing the character that he was supposed to. Anyway, it just drove me nuts. Michael Cera feeling himself as cool.
While he goes and plays Michael Cera in every
right,
other thing.
Right.
So
exactly.
How can you not come back and just go Michael Cera? Because
it was like he was hot at that
yeah,
time, you know?
But
so
that
he was
show,
like, anyway.
Everybody in that show, and this is no knock on any of them, basically went on to play similar characters and other things because they were so...
In everything that they did?
Whoever cast that show, though.
Yeah.
You know, like Tony Hale is an Emmy winner for that and for Veep.
Yeah, sure.
Like, unbelievable. Anyway, Menendez brothers. The reason, obviously, this has come up is Netflix has a series on the Menendez brothers. the Monsters series, which is the serial killer series from Ryan Murphy, who is really earning his $300 million from Netflix. I mean, the man is so rich, but he is like Shonda Rhimes plus Tyler Perry plus gay plus white. Because he is a studio unto himself and some. But
it's true.
He stretched maybe a little too thin. But the point is, Monsters, he did the Jeffrey Dahmer series, which I thought was good. And then he did this one. Now, the reason I brought this up, I normally don't make the subject of an episode like, I saw this series, let's talk about it, is because the DA in L.A. is going to try and resentence the Menendez brothers from life without the possibility of parole to 50 years to life with the possibility of parole, which would make them, they're in jail like 30 plus years now, they'd be eligible for parole. And some of this has to do with the new attention that the series has given the case. Now, I watched the series, but what I'm going to share with everybody is a little bit of history. Mm-hmm. Now, I was a teenager when I think the murder may have occurred before I was a teenager. I might have been like 11 or 12 when they killed their parents. Mm-hmm. And then the trial stretched on for a while because there was a mistrial, and then they were finally convicted. And the series go into all the details about the surrounding politics and you know, the losing the OJ case was very influential in sort of making the DA's office especially hard towards them. Like they needed politically, they needed a win. So they had to take it out on them. Like that was their last chance for like a super high profile early mid 90s win. Mm-hmm. But what I found interesting about this, damn you fly.
Is it that distract? You got the fly.
Got him. You don't come on my podcast and fuck around. He fucked around and found out.
That's right.
He flied around and found out. But here's the thing. In 2017, NBC ran a series, Law and Order, The Menendez Brothers. And it's, there's another fly. There's two flies.
There's probably more than two.
Okay, great. I'm going to get fucking Zika.
You're not going to get Zika.
My head is shrinking as we speak.
No.
So in 2017, Edie Falco of The Sopranos starred as the prosecutor in an NBC limited series about the Menendez brothers. And I watched it and I was blown away. In fact, I have a tweet that I've recently retweeted from 2017 where I said, just watch the Menendez brothers series on NBC. Really great. Had no idea how fucked their trial was. Hmm. Nobody was paying attention to me or NBC, apparently.
Right.
So they're in jail for more time. Nobody's trying to get them out. Nobody's doing anything. Mm-hmm. And then in like 2022, Peacock, an NBC streaming service, comes out with either 2022 or 2023, comes out with a limited series on Menudo. Now, mm-hmm. the Menendez brothers' father managed Menudo. He's the one who got them like a big deal, which is shown in the Ryan Murphy series. And in the series, one of the members of Menudo talks about how he was molested and or raped by the Menendez brothers' dad, which goes to their defense, which was their big defense, which is, we were repeatedly molested and raped by our father. Mm-hmm. Nobody did anything after the Menudo series either. I think you know where this is going. And then we get to the Netflix series finally, and Ryan Reynolds.
Murphy.
Sorry, Ryan Murphy. I apologize. Jeez. I'm sorry to do that, Ryan Murphy. Mint Mobile. I'm a scumbag, clearly. Ryan Murphy does this series and obviously had the thought of, you know what the problem with all the Menendez brothers content is? It's not gay porny enough. That'll get people to pay attention.
This is what I specialize in.
Yeah. I want Eric Menendez to go full frontal and get hard on screen in the shower.
Is it that? It's that graphic?
Well, what's funny to me is, and I don't know any guy, I mean, there's certainly guys who are blessed that they would never have to chub up at all. It's like, it's freezing in here, but whatever.
Yeah.
he's like chubbing up on camera. He's like soaping it up like while you're watching. I'm like, it looks fine, dude. You don't have to go full bone. And then like they cut back and it's almost like a time lapse photography. It's like he's showering and it's like you see him when he lifts his leg. Not that I watched this like the Zapruder film, but it was very talked about. Cooper, his name is Cooper Koch or Cooper Cock or mm-hmm. Cooper Coke. However you pronounce K-O-C-H. There's been many ways to pronounce that.
Yeah.
It would be funny if it was Cooper Cock though. But like he lifts his leg up, he's soaping. It's like, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
And then you cut back and he's doing like a two, like he's doing a real.
But they show it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He's doing it. But Ryan Murphy, not a fan. Apparently, there's a lot of white penis and Latino or Latino presenting penis in this. None of the black guys get dick shots.
Oh.
Ryan Murphy, another racist, gay, white elite.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like grinding it. And then you cut back, like they're showing these guys kind of making eye contact because they're running this whole plot line of Eric being like gay.
Yeah.
And then you cut back and it's like, okay, well, he's basically hard now. That's, you don't see that too often in a regular show or movie.
Yeah.
The progression of an erection. Though Willem Dafoe, impressive since we're talking about Cooper Cock and Coke. Willem Dafoe, one of the craziest stories I ever read was this movie that Lars von Trier did, really creepy fucking filmmaker. Did you ever see any of his movies? He did a movie with Willem Dafoe. Please, somebody comment what the title was. I forget what it... Yeah, maybe you can find it.
I'll look, yeah.
Willem Dafoe, Lars von Trier. Really weird movie. I remember it was like getting very, very like wide disparity in the reviews. Some people were like, what an edgy, brilliant film. And other people were like, what a mess. But they said it. I read in that thing that Willem Dafoe, there's a cock shot of him. And they said they used a prosthetic. It looked, you know, relatively girthy and normal. They were like, they used a prosthetic cock for
Antichrist.
Antichrist. Thank yeah. you.
I've never seen this.
They're terrible. They were like, they used a prosthetic penis for Willem Dafoe because his real penis was too distractingly big.
Isn't good for him.
What a flex.
Yeah.
Just give me the normal girthy 7-inch prosthetic because I don't want to scare anybody. Or it should be like this. I don't want to scare anybody with my cock. Hello, shark bait. Finding Nemo. Can you find my cock, Peter Parker?
I'm something of a scientist myself.
It's sort of a let JL do the impressions kind of thing. No, I like it when Mike tries to get me the impression game. I enjoy it. I'm just messing with you.
I think it's sort of in the face, though, too, Mike.
Hello, oh, Peter yeah, I Parker. I can't do
hello,
any of that.
Peter Parker. So let's just go, shark bait.
That's my Finding Nemo. Yeah.
With the...
what a story if that's true.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
because it's not like the prosthetic was like shameful or bad. It was just like, we don't want to. I mean, it's a movie where a woman's like biting your dick till it bleeds. We don't want to distract them with maybe it was just weird. It's a weird story, but good for Willem Dafoe. Isn't that the way? He's like a short gargoyle.
Yeah, like, kind of.
But then he's like, hey, you ever heard of Milton Berle? I'm sorry. This is what Ryan Murphy does to me when I think of cocks. I can't control myself. That was Heat, everybody. Get with the program. But the point is, now that we're off that, Ryan Murphy's show gets all this attention.
Yeah.
And now people, and the guys were complaining, apparently, the Menendez brothers. And
yeah, they didn't like it.
Ryan Murphy, yeah. Instead of just being somewhat sensitive to the issue, was like, excuse me, girlfriend. I'm just kidding. I'm making him sound like Big Gay Al from the South Park. But he was like, the only reason anybody's talking about you right now, he turned like mean girls yep. in his press comments. The only reason anybody's talking about you lame bitches is because of my series. You're welcome. That was the tone of the letter. I don't know if it was quite that mean girls.
Yeah.
But it made me think, first of all, NBC. Wow, what a double L.
Yes.
You've been doing nothing but getting the Menendez brothers story out there and no one except me gave a shit.
Yep.
And by the way, that it's on Peacock now, but that Law and Order series is very like tasteful. And I remember just watching it and you know, putting my lawyer hat on a little bit and going, get out of here, fly.
I can't with you with the flies.
But it gets like in my face. Yeah, it's not like here. I don't mind.
I just see it coming.
You do see it?
Yes.
And you're like, when's he gonna react?
Yes.
So I mean, a big L for NBC and Peacock, because it's on Peacock now, but it was, I watched it with Laura and we were both like, wow, that was A, really good, and B, really made us think. Like, I remember getting into an argument with a coworker where I was like, I think they should be out. And this wasn't me saying the Menendez brothers should have never gone to jail. They brutally murdered their parents. Brutally. Like, the Netflix series is graphic as fuck. Mm-hmm. But if they were in a world where it's always the same people who, like, it was the same guy. He's one of these, like, when somebody's a child molester, they deserve to go to jail and get beaten and raped and assaulted and tortured the rest of their lives. I'm not saying I don't understand that. That's just not my thought process, but I get it. Mm-hmm. But then how is it the converse not true, where they were raped a lot by their parents, but no, they should rot in jail for the rest of their lives? How is that not a mitigating circumstance? It should be. But the second trial was they were kind of railroaded for politics in part. But the point is, when I saw that series, I was like, wow, somebody should do something. And nobody gave a shit. And then the Menudo thing came out. And I saw like a blip about it and nobody did anything. But then Netflix does it and there's action being taken. Real action. They may get out of jail. And first off, just on the Ryan Murphy series, some of the acting is bad. I don't think it's that great a show. It's very high budget. It's very, but with one exception, Javier Bardem better get an Emmy.
He plays his dad?
He plays the dad.
Yeah.
I think it's the best thing I've ever seen him do. I don't watch him do Spanish stuff because I'm an American, but and I'm including No Country for Old Men. I think he is great in this. A lot of range within the role. I think he's great. I really think, and it makes sense. He's the Oscar winner in the cast.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I thought he was so good and no one was really up to, got him. No one was really up to his level on the acting front. Also, Ryan Murphy, they're teenagers. They're not buff 30-year-old go-go models. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are shredded. I'm like, the Menendez brothers definitely didn't look like this, and yeah, not even close. So once again, the homoerotic fantasy thing is definitely coming in. But I just thought, what does this? Now, you haven't watched any of these shows, right? You've heard of them.
Of course, I've heard of them. Right. Yeah, I have not watched though.
But to me, the reason I think this is so important for this show is, what does that tell us about where we're headed as a society? Because forget the NBC series. You know who also should have played a role in this? Journalists.
Sure.
The appellate court system.
Yeah.
And instead, it goes 20 years, and I see a great show on NBC, a pretty mainstream platform. It goes by without a hitch. So we are, first of all, too tethered to Netflix, apparently, for both our entertainment and our news now. But I think it's just, I think it's a bad sign. I don't think the show, and that's the thing, I don't think the show is that great. But
it's such a bad sign. Because my thought on it, the reason that I haven't watched it is because I think that it is horribly exploitative of the situation, because maybe now they're getting, you know, I don't know enough about the actual story and what happened to have an opinion on whether they should be in jail or not. I mean, my gut instinct says they killed two people and people should be in jail for that. But I can understand that there's more to the story and maybe I don't have the facts to have an opinion. But I don't think for a second that Ryan Murphy did this to get these guys out of jail. I think Ryan Murphy did this because he found this true crime like story, and now true crime has become the thing. It's like everybody's fucking entertainment are these cases where people are really victims.
Yes.
In one way or the other. In this case, it goes both ways. You know, people were killed. People were molested. There's all this horrifying shit.
That's why I like real. The NBC series, because I felt like it took it. It was done with gravitas,
right?
And like, it felt, without knowing everything, because this is the thing. I was, like I said, I was an early teen.
Yeah.
I wasn't fucking into news right. when I was 13. I was like, oh, they killed their parents. Weird.
Right.
Crazy. Yikes.
So if at the end of this, these guys get out and there is enough of a story here and enough evidence to say that maybe, you know, they served their time, it's time for them to go, then I guess that's a good thing. But under no circumstances do I think that Ryan Murphy was trying to be, you know, a journalist here to be on the right side of
no.
helping the innocent get out of jail. In fact, he followed this up almost immediately with an Aaron Hernandez true crime show. That is, it's the same thing. Aaron Hernandez killed a bunch of people, but and he's the main character.
But more importantly, for Ryan Murphy's purposes, he was gay.
Right, but it just becomes this thing where it's like, how many of these fucking stories is this guy gonna do? Where it's just like he's shooting these glossy, sexy like true crime stories and putting them on film.
By the way, the Aaron Hernandez story, a fake black erection.
Oh,
I'm just letting you know, in episode one or in episode two, when he goes to Florida, I guess it was showing how like macho and homoerotic the environment was.
Yeah.
I guess the big dicked member of the team was like walking up to a guy like, if you move, you're gay.
Yeah.
You move, you're gay. Like, yeah, and it was like, there it is. So Ryan Murphy has a lot to answer to the black penis community.
Right.
OK, but there's a black penis erasure in the Ryan Murphy universe. His next movie is going to be called Black Dick. It's a 9-part episode about black penises.
But you're right. I do think there's this thing now where it's just
we lost all ads, by the way.
If it doesn't happen on the internet, if it doesn't happen through streaming services, then it really just doesn't matter. It doesn't have enough juice.
Right.
And even still, it's like you start to see this now with the Innocence Project and all these campaigns to try to get like wrongfully convicted people out of jail. I never see about it until 3 days before the guy is about to get executed.
Great point.
And then it's just sort of just like, maybe if I would have known to know about this a year ago, since this person's been on death row and I could have investigated this like myself and had like an opinion on this. Don't give me, we have 24 hours to get this guy a stay of execution. I just don't understand. It's like these stories don't make it to anybody because nobody reads the newspaper anymore. Nobody watches the news.
7-day in-print subscriber.
You're old.
I'm nobody. You should have said you're nobody.
But this is the thing. It's like all of these things. Do you know Bill Friedkin, the guy who directed
The Exorcist?
Yeah.
He directed it.
Yeah. And the French Connection.
Jinx, what I like is that you're fired up, Mike. I like that this has you fired up.
Friedkin's one of my heroes.
Not Friedkin, just the topic in general.
It's both of these things. But Friedkin...
Wasn't Friedkin what Puff Daddy was hosting?
No, come on.
What?
Bill Friedkin is like a...
What was he hosting?
Freak Offs.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. Honest mistake. I'm here for the Friedkin movie premiere. Why is there all this baby oil and crying?
Friedkin obviously is like one of the top filmmakers of the 70s, iconic filmmaker, French Connection, Exorcist, Cruisin', one of my favorite movies, did a lot of great work. Yeah, Pacino. You know, he got his start in filmmaking because he when he was in Chicago, there was a guy who was on death row and they were going to execute him. And I don't know if he had talked to a journalist but he had heard from people that were in the know on the case that this guy was, you know, he did not commit the crime that he committed. Mm-hmm. And nobody could basically do anything about it. He made this documentary about how this guy was wrongfully convicted. And I don't think that he got him released from jail, but he stopped him from getting executed. Mm-hmm. But he went through all this work to make this piece of like fact, not fiction, not right. like some glossy fucking, but this documentary. And that's what launched the dude's film career. He did that. Somebody saw that. Then he started.
So what you're saying is I should do a stand-up comedy show for death row inmates?
No, I'm saying that there was a time where this
Mike,
type of
a master
stuff,
of the yes and in improv. the deuce would be proud of you.
No. You just completely cut me off while I was talking. Don't deuce me, all right, bro? I'm just saying that there was a time and place, like there was a time where you knew about these things.
Yes.
It was in the public. It's like there's also, it's a generational thing where the youth just, they come to things and they try to pretend like it's the first time it's being thought of, that like the Menendez case wasn't this huge case in the 90s, that it's just like, did you guys hear about this Menendez thing? It's just like
Millie Vanilli
in
the series, Millie Vanilli, which it does get a lot of play and it is funny, admittedly, the usage of Millie Vanilli.
But it's just like, it's like all of a sudden, because like Gen Z now has like a fast track to the Menendez brothers, all of a sudden there's interest.
It's kind of a Trumpian quality to Gen Z, which is like,
Nobody's ever heard of this.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Nobody's ever heard of the Menendez. You ever heard of Menendez, brother? He's got killed their parents. He's a nasty ass. Yeah. But they're also getting butt raped, which is not nice. By the way, we don't like that. That's actually bad. Some people call it bad. I call it very bad. Well, what I was going to say is I want to recommend two things while we're on this, like while you brought that up. Gilbert King, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning author of Devil in the Grove, great book. He did a podcast called Bone Valley, which is about a guy that he helped on this topic. I would recommend you listen to it from the start. Mm-hmm. Really gripping, really good stuff. He helped get this guy out of prison. Like yeah. Falsely accused of murder. Like the guy just got out like a few months ago. Like this was a passion project. Yes, he turned it into content, but in a way that got people involved, raised the stakes of it, not some dramatization, yeah. but it was like,
and that is different.
Yes.
I do think that's different.
And on the other topic, another person who I keep saying, where's her movie? Now, I know this would be a movie, but Maya Moore.
Yeah.
You know who Maya Moore is?
Yes, a WNBA left.
Legendary WNBA player, incredible talent. Left the I mean, I think I may have brought this up in a previous episode. Basically, imagine if Steph Curry were also like Muhammad Ali. And I know that, I know that sounds like an exaggeration, but when she gave up her career, she wasn't kicked out of the league, but she gave up her career in her prime. This is a legendary Hall of Fame.
Yes.
College All-American, MVP, really, and a really exciting talent. Not like an Angel Reese type player, but a real more Caitlin Clark plus
right.
in terms of her game. Freed a man from death row.
Yep.
And married him.
And married him, yeah.
And gave up her basketball career. And like, that is as much fucking walk the walk to give up.
Totally.
To give up greatness in one thing to be a great person.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. So these are the story, like, you know, but obviously Ryan Murphy's never going to tell that because he hates the straights. And I was talking to somebody at work today and we brought up like, why hasn't there been a Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill FX series?
But HBO did one.
I know, but now I want the FX gloss.
Oh, got it.
Sometimes I want the Ryan Murphy gloss. Sometimes I don't. It's not, okay. I don't have to take it all or leave it all. Sometimes I feel like that would be a good one because you know he'd love to do some Clarence Thomas watching porn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Putting pubes on a Coke can. Ryan Murphy would be
oh,
like,
God.
Everybody today is the pubes on the Coke can episode. Episode 3, pubes and go.
Lock Action. In, everybody. We're Action. Making art here.
But I'm so glad you got as impassioned about this as I am, because that's what bothered me about this. It's not that, all jokes aside, it's not that Ryan Murphy made a dramatization of the movie. And I don't think he cared whether they got, like, I don't think that had anything to do with it.
No, not a thought. Not even a thought.
Which is why he responded so like, snark, like
who cares? This is my art. I don't care about what you guys.
Nobody would even know who you are, yeah. bitch, if I didn't do this series. Yeah. That's not the way you talk to people that you want to get off death row.
I know.
Rage Against the Machine doesn't talk about the guy like in jail for killing a cop in Philly allegedly by going like, shut the fuck up. We did music, bro.
Yeah, right.
They do more songs about him and like protest shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, it just fits into my narrative of this navel gazing, not reading enough, not paying attention enough, not doing enough kind of society where it's like, Netflix, I mean, it's a great ad for Netflix. Like I joked with somebody, I said, instead of judges and lawyers, now death row inmates will be like, this could be my job. Law influencer.
Yeah.
Courtroom influencer, where I do TikToks about people who are like serving long sentences or shouldn't be in jail. It's like, let's free him from jail. Smash the subscribe button, bro.
Yeah.
That's where we are. And it's not that that couldn't be helpful, but how could we be in that? Like, there's so many layers of failure to get to the point where you need a law influencer. But that would be that's a funny idea for like a sketch or a
they
or
kind
a
TV of have, series. They kind of exist.
But no, I mean, I don't just mean like people on TV talking heads and stuff.
No, I don't. No.
Oh, you mean like literally?
Yes, there are people that will do a TikTok that's just like, here's what you don't know about blah, 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 blah. Like there's been two that I've seen recently where and it started from the Innocence Project, where it was just like, we have 72 hours to save this person from lethal injection. And it was just like, we're just hearing about this? Like, that's not a lot of time.
Do you think some of them are like, bro, we get more engagement if we wait till the last 2 days?
Maybe.
It's like 3 months out. They're like, no, bro, nobody's going to watch this. We have to wait like an episode of 24.
But then the thing is, you start seeing it get traction.
Right.
Because I do think there's whatever sick conditioning we have now for social media. People see that now as this time limit where they're like, well, if I don't share this right now, then it's the blood is on my hands. That we had 72 hours to save this guy. I'm literally just learning about this now. I know none of the facts. And let me just post about getting this person off. Because we only have 2 days. Otherwise this person's dead and we didn't do anything. At least I shared this post.
And then I'm going to go vote for Trump.
I mean, yeah, it's just fucking, we're in a real shitstorm.
Aren't we?
It's so bad, dude.
It's so bad.
It's not savable. I mean,
you've bought in. Mike is now fully bought in.
I didn't
in
have
on
to go
thesis.
Very far.
But you know what? But we, you know, you were months ago, you were at I haven't decided to make my endorsement yet of JL. And now I feel like I've got the official endorsement.
Because I just think that like over the last year, I have just felt so much more exhausted by the internet.
Yeah.
And just the way that we kind of
welcome
treat
to the internet. Have a look around. You know, the Bo Burnham bit?
No, I don't know.
Oh my God. Okay. Everybody, including Mike, after you watch Half Blackface and give it a 5-star review on Amazon Prime, or Mike, you can just go right to this.
Well, the World Series.
Inside Bo Burnham.
I know. Yeah, I've heard.
It's
excellent.
But this is why I think he's such a genius, is because he is that young person who has such a meta, brilliant, insightful view of the world that made him. Like, he's like coming from, he was made by the internet and is like such a brilliant satirist of the internet.
Yeah.
And then Welcome to the Internet was like the most viral video. You could just watch that video on YouTube. It's only like 3 minutes, but it's like him doing this, like, something wicked this way comes, like, look, where he's just doing like this carnival song about the internet being fucking disgusting. And it's incredible. But yeah, that's where we are now. And it's the Menendez Brothers series just made me think of that, because all I could think was, but I did my part. I tweeted.
Right.
7 years ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't an influencer yet, Mike.
I know. I know.
And I blame the world. I blame the world. If they had elevated me quicker, I might have been able to save the Menendez Brothers. But it's funny to think they might have been in prison, whatever you think of them. If the law determines that they've served their sentence, a just sentence, they have served probably 7 more years in jail than they should have if people were just even doing the TV is my news source thing.
Yeah.
Then. But for it to have to be Ryan Murphy and it has to be Netflix, to me, it's like you're going to have people like pitching Ryan Murphy on shows. Yeah. Like, hey, I have a guy who's on death row. Could you do a show about him? Because then people will pay attention.
Can we make it gay?
Well, how many times has he had sex in the shower? Once, and it wasn't consensual. Pass.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why I wanted everybody go watch. I recommend the Law and Order series on Peacock from 2017. But I just think it was just such a weird thing that it speaks to such specificity of how bad we are, because it's like Netflix, Amazon. I once wrote a sketch that I'd hoped like in a packet for Kimmel that obviously went nowhere. But one of the sketches was almost like a Conan type sketch where I was like, instead of in the year 2000, it was like the future. And let's check in with the only company in existence in 2040, Amaface Goople. Thank you. Right? It was, and I didn't have Netflix. Netflix was like not really what it is now when I wrote that joke, but it would be like, that's the idea. It's like, you're going to have one company, nothing else will get paid attention to. You're wasting your time to do anything anywhere else.
Yeah.
But on top of that, what it says to us about news consumption, about activism, about, and the fact it's a cherry on top that it's like somebody who clearly wasn't even trying to be an activist when making this.
Oh, I know.
Which makes it extra ironic.
Yeah.
So, there's your recommendations. But Bone Valley, anywhere you listen to podcasts, I suggest you listen to the whole series. It's very on point with what Mike and I have been talking about. So that's the Menendez brothers. Probably a lot more penis talk than people were prepared for from this podcast. But you know what? like a lot of the actors in Ryan Murphy shows, we're versatile.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, guys, we're going to come back after the break with Comedy Talk. And we're back. Mike, how was that second break?
Just as good as the first.
I think this has been an outstanding episode. You've laughed a
lot. It has been good,
yeah. Episode.
Yeah.
We criticized society. We talked about Willem Dafoe more than people are probably comfortable with.
Yeah, a lot of cock talk.
Well, guess what, Peter Parker? Take a look at this.
I don't have enough spider web to catch it.
That's right.
Okay, well, Punchdown of the Week. And it was about time we had a classic.
Yeah.
This is what the category was made for. And this is somebody who's been a longtime follower of mine. I'm not naming them. I'm not trying to insult them. But you know what? When you deliver a grade A Punchdown of the Week, and the only reason I'm reading theirs, other people did similar punchdowns to this post, but he or she was the first.
Mm-hmm.
So my tweet was, and I've done a series of these sarcastic ones leading up to the election. I'm concerned about anti-Semitism on college campuses, and therefore will vote for the guy who said Hitler did some good things.
Okay.
I was hoping for a little bit of a laugh. Got a lot of retweets and...
We've reached the comedy portion of this episode. No, I'm out of gas.
Okay. And I got a reply in quotes. I'm concerned about anti-Semitism, so I'm going to vote for the guy who had Nick Fuentes and Kanye West over to his house for dinner. So I give you Hitler. That's endgame for anti-Semitism. Right? You'd agree?
Yeah.
Hitler is more unassailable than Jordan is
in basketball. It's like Hitler and the Pharaoh.
Yeah. Hitler, Wayne Gretzky goat level,
yeah.
Where there's such distance between one and two,
yeah.
Versus Jordan, where somebody like me will make an argument for LeBron.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why that's a classic punchdown, because you are literally giving me a like I got number one answer on the survey, Hitler, ding. And then you said, no, actually, Steve Harvey, I think Nick Fuentes and Kanye West is number one. And he goes, what the hell are you talking about? It's number five. And so that's a classic punchdown of the week. You're like adding to my joke when the joke is, it is a closed finish. Hitler, end scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a punchdown of the week. For those of you who are new to the show, who don't know, that's a punchdown where you try to add to my joke and per se make it worse. So now, comedy special this week. I watched a Netflix special of a comedian that I want Hasan Minhaj. Okay. And I've really focused on pronouncing his name right, because I used to always say, like a lot of people, Hasan Minhaj, but it's Hasan Minhaj. Him. That guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know him.
He has a special called Off With His Head. And that's, I think, alluding in part to his losing The Daily Show, because The New Yorker wrote an article about how his comedy was sort of this false, exaggerated reality. And I know a lot of people were like, that's ridiculous. I understood what the author was saying more than this, because his comedy brand had been elevated in the same way that maybe a Gary Gulman talking about mental health, or a Hannah Gadsby talking about her struggles, whether you like them or not, the authenticity raised the profile. So if these are bullshit stories or exaggerated stories, and you find out, it does diminish the work a little bit, because some of what people gravitate to is this authenticity in the humor.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I think I understood the author's point. It didn't make me not be a fan of his. But the thing with Hasan is everything he has done, I have sort of not liked at first, and he has grown on me.
Mm-hmm.
So like his first special, I think The Court Jester might have been the title. I'm literally watching it and being annoyed by him. And by the end of it, I was like, that was a pretty good special. But I was like, in real time, I was like, this overconfident, like skinny hip hop gesturing Indian kid, I'm like a little annoyed by him.
Yeah.
But as it goes on, he's a smart guy. He's funny. And it was really good, I thought. Then his show, Patriot Act, very like kind of more youthful John Oliver type show. it was a good way to, you know, before church on Sunday, you're sipping some coffee. And I turned that on every Sunday morning. And I was like, he's kind of annoying. But he wore me down. And I eventually was like, I really like the show. And then they canceled it. Mm-hmm. Of course, once I was like, you know what? I'm all in. This was the last episode of Patriot Act, JL. God damn it. So I looked forward to this one, not necessarily for him to talk about, because he doesn't really focus a lot on the New Yorker issue. But it was just, it was not, it wasn't anywhere close to his other work. And I'm including like The Show and his other special. Like it was like more physical. It was more like cocky, but it felt a little more put on. Almost this like, they try, he doesn't say this, but it had a little bit of the like, I'm out here in these streets. They tried to, I don't give a fuck like that. And it was like, I don't feel like that's necessarily you mm-hmm. or what I, maybe it is. It's not what I've liked about him. So there were a couple of good bits, but I just didn't care. I would say watch Court Jester. I think that was his first one. And Patriot Act, if it's even still on Netflix, if they didn't kowtow to Saudi Arabia or India, who hated his show for his insightful exposés on them. Or he can go gay and then Ryan Murphy can do a Netflix series about him getting canceled. Mm-hmm. Inception.
Yeah.
Ryan Murphy. So yeah, I mean, obviously sometimes, and somebody, by the way, I'll end with this. Somebody had written to me, and I meant to address it like a month or two ago, and they, and it was a nice comment. They're a fan. They're like, why do you review comedy specials? Because I would feel like it could only hurt you. And my answer to that, in all seriousness, is somebody has to. And I'm tired, and Tony Hinchcliffe is a great example. I retweeted a comedian, Sean O'Connor, today who expressed something I've expressed for a long time, ever since I did my Louis C.K. video in 2013, which is comedians think we can critique and bitch about everything, and that's our right, except comedians. Mm-hmm. We are somehow in a glass case where you can't touch us. And I believe comedy critiquing, in all seriousness, not as a mean thing. I didn't fucking shit on Hassan. I said, I like his work. I didn't think this was up to par with his other work. I know it doesn't have to be me, but it just feels like we are, comics live in their own self-made safe space where it's like, you can't say that. Comics get like carte blanche to say anything they want. And you can't go after a comic. Dave Chappelle is sacred. Louis C.K. is sacred. Tony Hinchcliffe is untouched. You can't do that if you're a real comic. And I said, but somebody's got to review. It's art. It's like anything else. Yeah, you might love his special. I'm not here to tell you you're wrong. I'm here giving you my opinion. A lot of my listeners and viewers respect my opinion, even if they don't agree. So somebody's got to do it. And who better than the guy whose career is already dead? Me. So guys, thank you so much. This was an epic episode, but I hope you had as much fun watching and or listening as I did with Mike making it. Mike, if you would just give them the housekeeping issues and then we can all get out of here.
Well, obviously, if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, you can go over and watch it on YouTube. That is sort of where we have our forum. You can leave a comment if you had any thoughts about what we were saying regarding the Menendez brothers or Trump. We really covered a lot of ground in this episode. So let your comments fly there. It also helps us with the algorithm. So we would appreciate that. Conversely, if you are watching the show on YouTube, why don't you go ahead and leave us a highly starred review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can leave comments on Spotify now, too. So that's fun. But just let us know what you're thinking. We appreciate you listening. And back to you, JL.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you as always. But please, you know, share the podcast. Tell a friend. Go watch Half Blackface, and I hope to see some of you in Princeton next weekend. But go vote for Kamala Harris. Don't vote for Trump. I'm not one of these. Just vote. Just participate. No, we're past that. Please fall down some stairs. You know, choke on something. Get lost. Drown if you're going to vote for Trump. But get out there and vote for Kamala Harris. Let's go, America. Bye bye.